You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey everyone, we're talking Marlins baseball. I'm Tim McMaster, along with our MLB.com Marlins reporter, Joe Frisaro. And Joe, the Hall of Fame class of 2017 will include a Marlin, and that is Ivan Rodriguez. He spent that one season in Miami with the Marlins, Joe, but boy, it was a good one back in 2003 as they won the World Series. So of his 21 seasons, one of them in South Florida, but I would think Marlins fans still thrilled to see this guy get his due and head to Cooperstown on the first ballot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, Pudge, you know, he kind of has ties to South Florida. He has a home here, or at least had. You know, it was a big year. You know, they got him on that one-year deal when back at a time when no one was kind of taking the one-year deals. He was going to get the big contract. The Marlins offer him 1 year, kind of shocked everybody. And, you know, he comes in, and like you say, what, 21 years, his one ring came as a Marlin. And, you know, when I thought back of all that he accomplished in that season, you know, he kind of started off a little rough that year. As the team got better, you know, he kind of got better. And, you know, his leadership and his production in the playoffs especially were really telling, I think, back to the NLCS when he was the MVP of that series against the Cubs. Big hit after big hit. Go even before that to the division series. He had a couple of huge hits that helped them beat the Giants. And, of course, one of the most memorable plays in Marlins history, tagging out J.T. Snow while absorbing that pretty hard collision at the plate and holding the baseball up, cupping it in his hand in triumph. And then obviously, you know, embracing his teammates after Josh Beckett's, you know, gem in game six of the World Series. So, yeah, Pudge, a short tenure with the Marlins, but a legacy that's going to last the history of this franchise and in the minds of Marlins fans for a long, long time.
And that's a perfect segue for us, Joe, into our talk this week of the catchers on this roster as we continue to break down the Marlins roster heading into 2017. And this is a position that for years was there wasn't a true guy that you really you look to as the guy for this Marlins team since Pudge, obviously, way back in 2003. But JT Realmuto really took over the spot last year, and I think he was second best in the National League in WAR behind Buster Posey, or tied for second. Had a tremendous season to the point where now you can look at that catcher spot as a true strength for this Marlins team.
Oh, no question. And, you know, I did a little research on that around the horn story I did on catcher position. And, you know, since Pudge's year in 03, the Marlins have had 11 different opening day catchers in 14 years. And, you know, JT, barring anything bad happened to him in spring, you know, he will be the opening day catcher for the second year in a row. But, you know, Tim, this is a guy who is really unheralded, who I think, you know, baseball people know who he is. But I think, you know, the industry is going to start seeing a guy becoming an all-star caliber player. As you noted, you know, Buster Posey had a 4.0 WAR last year, tops among all NL catchers. JT Realmuto and Wilson Ramos, who now, of course, is at Tampa Bay, they both had 3.5, you know, WAR. That, they were second. In terms of Marlin catchers who had 100, who played in 100 games or more, JT Realmuto is the only catcher to hit above 300. Pudge in his year hit 297. JT hits 303. His 152 hits or 154 hits last year, most ever by a Marlins catcher. You know, there's going to be a lot of firsts. You know, he's still, you know, in the controllable stages before he even reaches arbitration. I'm sure the team and will in the next few years make him an extremely high priority to lock up long term. But, you know, he's a different type of catcher. As you know, we're starting to see a few more really athletic catchers, guys who can run, you know, guys that bring a little bit more to the table than the traditional catch and throw, and then maybe hit for a little bit of power or something. But, you know, he's a converted quarterback out of high school. He was a shortstop in high school, got drafted as a shortstop. They made a really smart call initially by moving him behind the plate. And it looks like the Marlins got really one of the better fine catchers in the game.
Behind him will be A.J. Ellis, one of the Marlins signings in free agency this offseason. And it's a veteran presence there. And I guess there's two things you get there. Not only can JT Realmuto pick his brain, but you have a lot of young pitchers here, and they can be helped out as well. A.J. Ellis Will he be as important off the field as he is on the field for the Marlins?
Oh, no question. I mean, Jeff, make no mistake, Jeff Mathis is a very valued guy. They got him in 13, and he was a mentor to JT and a complete leader in this clubhouse. And when, they made the decision not to really strongly pursue Jeff, and Mathis signs with Arizona, a really good fallback to get A.J. Ellis, who, of course, played for Tom Mattingly in L.A., has playoff experience. He kind of brings a lot of the same that Jeff Mathis does in terms of being just a real pro's pro. Probably not the defensive catcher that Mathis is, but, a little better offensive player. So they're going to, they're going to really be relying on Ellis to kind of, help further develop JT, as well as be a productive bat when he gets in the lineup on the days he gets the nod.
Now, how about reading on the site a little bit, Joe? How about Real Muto getting tried out a little bit at first base maybe during spring training just to get him away from the plate a little bit? Is that a possibility?
Yeah. Michael Hill, the president of baseball operations, has kind of floated this around since the winter meetings. Posey does it in San Francisco, that, the Marlins don't really have yet, and I'm not sure they're going to get one, that right-handed, complement to Justin Bour at first base. Now, I don't think it'd be a stick platoon where he'd go there all the time. I also think if you're going with a thin bench, you got Ellis is, like I said, a little more offensive-minded than Mathis, so they feel like to go with him behind the plate and then occasionally get JT and, keep his bat in the lineup. If it's for 10 games over the year, it'll be real interesting to see if he can handle that. Clearly, he's athletic enough, but keep in mind, he's never played first base. So, I'm sure it's going to be something in spring training we're going to keep an eye on. They got a really good infield instructor in Perry Hill, clearly one of the best instructors in the game in terms of technique and preparation. And it'll be interesting to see if JT can handle that. It's a move the Marlins will make. Now, I have a couple of reservations about this one, Tim. I'm sure all for the flexibility of playing a lot of positions, especially in the National League, and wanting to preserve a player. JT will turn 26 early in the season. If you can get him off his, out of the crouch and out of the grind. But JT, if there's a knock on him, the defense of framing is a little bit of an issue. He's going to be dealing with a lot of relievers who can get a lot of work. He's dealing with, two, maybe three, maybe even four at times, different starting pitchers than he dealt with last year. And, I just wonder if they're going to put too much on his plate. You'd hate to see him take a step backwards defensively and as a catcher because he's focused on first base.
The other catcher on the 40-man roster is Tomas Tolis. Hit his first major league home run, I think, on the last day of the season in 2016. I assume he is headed to AAA most likely to start the season. How ready is he for the big leagues?
Well, they say his bat is ready. He's a switch hitter, hit really well. I think he hit over 300 in AAA last year. He's a guy who is more of an offensive-minded catcher than defense. And, if they want to, they could possibly carry him on the big league club and then do a little bit more of what we were talking about, JT, at first, perhaps even Tolis getting some time at first and still kind of be protected, instead of having both of your catchers in the game, because if something were to happen to somebody, it really puts you in a shorthanded situation. So Tolis is a guy who, if his defense picks it up, is ready for the big leagues. But, his bat, from all indications, is pretty much there. So they at least got offensive depth, at that position. So Tolis could be an interesting guy to see if this guy is ready to kind of contribute in a part-time basis, however the role might be.
These catchers will be dealing with the starting pitchers and also, obviously, the bullpen. And Michael Hill recently talked about the fact that because they've added so many arms to that bullpen, Joe, and there's a lot of depth there and guys that can do different kinds of things, that we may see the Marlins with maybe a different kind of approach to how they'll use their bullpen in 2017.
Yeah, I think they're going to be a little unconventional or unorthodox, however you want to call it. Michael talked a little bit about being creative, and then he kind of rephrased it to non-traditional. This is a team, we've addressed it before, they don't have the true ace. They've kind of stacked up on threes and four type caliber pitchers. And if these guys aren't going as deep into games, the bullpen is going to be heavily relied on. You know, we saw the playoffs, and everyone knows you can't do that over 162, which is correct. If you're using the same two or three pitchers, you can't use Andrew Miller three innings a night over 162 in Cleveland. But the Marlins feel with, you know, there's a really good chance they're going to carry eight relievers and a 13-man staff. So, this team's got two or three big league-ready depth to come up from AAA. So they're going to have about 10 or more relievers who can contribute. So I think they're really going to look at analytics on their starters, and they're going to look at matchups. And if they're going to go an inning and two-thirds with somebody one night, that guy may get a couple of days off, but they have reinforcements to kind of patch up, their bullpen. So I think this is kind of funny. We talk pace of play in this sport. I think the Marlins and Don Mattingly could be going to a spin quite regularly and in situations that you didn't normally see in the past, while you just say, hey, let my starter go six no matter what, or seven no matter what, because he's got to learn to do that. They might be doing a little bit more mixing and matching of relievers in that regard.
Well, it was a big storyline, obviously, throughout the postseason with what the Indians were able to do, and it'll kind of be a growing thing around baseball. We'll see how the Marlins monitor that bullpen throughout the season. Something to watch for this 2017 team. Great stuff as always, Joe. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Marlins edition. For Joe Fresaro, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next week.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go, every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.